I'm Right Here is the latest novel by Dublin-born writer Yvonne Cassidy, the story of two journeys inextricably linked across distance and time, a story of struggle and identity and loss and about finding out who we really are. But most of all, a story about friendship and about what it means to be free. To tell me more about the book and indeed her life as a writer, Yvonne joins me now online from New York. Welcome to Global Village, Yvonne.
Thank you, Jill. Thanks for having me on the show.
Now, it's so exciting to have you on the show because I've known you for at least the last 7 years. And the last time I spoke to you, you had just written The Other Boy. And you've written four books in 6 years. That's incredible. You must have broken some kind of record.
Well, thanks, Jill. I think I broke my own record, I think, for sure. I remember getting my first book contract for The Other Boy, and it said in it that I had a delivery date for a second book. And I was terribly nervous because, you know, writing one book is one thing, but then it's suddenly like, oh my God, where's the other idea going to come from? But I don't know, once you kind of start, for me anyway, it's been great. And I've just been really enjoying the ideas that have come up and, you know, just being able to take advantage of it and go for them.
And tell me, Yvonne, did you always know you'd write a book? Did you always love writing?
I did, yeah, I absolutely did. Back in secondary school, I had a really fantastic English teacher, and she really encouraged me, to do the creative writing essays and stuff. And I always just loved it. It was one of those things I'd start to write, and an hour could go by, and it would feel like 5 minutes. You know, it was always great. So I knew I always wanted to do it. I suppose for most of my 20s, I kind of talked about doing it and did writing classes and stuff, but you know, it was a time when I was more focused on my career and other things. So it really wasn't, it was when I turned 30 that I decided, you know, I want to get a bit serious about this and see if I can actually do it. And I took some time off work and wrote what was probably an awful first draft of The Other Boy. But, you know, it was the first draft and it was a body of work that was there and just went from there.
That's incredible. And of course, congratulations are in order as well, Yvonne, because not only have you written four books, but you've got married in September 2015 and to your wife, Danielle. So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, it's been a time of a lot of change, really, the last few years. Myself and Danielle met in 2000, which was right before The Other Boy came out, and then I moved over here in 2011, we got married a few years later. So, yeah, it's just been, you know, it's one of those trajectories I don't think I ever really thought my life was going to take. And it has. And I feel really lucky and I'm really enjoying it.
And did you find, because your sexuality, you know, it's something that when you find yourself, I suppose, not mm-hmm. heterosexual, it's always a bit of a journey to embrace what you like. Nobody sets out to be gay, you know. Suddenly, you're all surprised. Oh, okay, I didn't know that about me. Did you find your writing kind of helped become aware of that part of your identity?
I think it probably did. I mean, you know, you mentioned earlier about, you know, writing four books in a short period of time. And I think that it's sort of inextricably linked to, you know, getting to know that part of myself better. And I think, you know, as a writer, you're really working with what you have internally. So the better you know yourself, the more material you have in a way, or at least that's how it is for me. And my third book, How Many Letters Are in Goodbye, was the first time that I explored that in my actual writing. And my protagonist, Rhea, in that book is a young gay character, and she's 17 and she's really spunky, and, you know, she's really not, you know, afraid of her sexuality in any way, and she really embraces it. And for me, in a way, that kind of felt like writing a journey that I didn't take, because it took me, you know, a lot longer. And it was sort of liberating and fun at the same time. And that book came out here in the US in 2016 and actually was marketed over here as a YA book, a young adult book. And
you're not serious, really?
Yeah, it did. And it's funny because some of my books, you know, they're adult in Ireland, they're YA over here. But the thing that kind of touched me was that it got shortlisted for this thing called the Rainbow List, which basically means
amazing.
That this book would go into schools and more young people will read it and stuff. So for me, if that helps, you know, even one person with their own identity and their own journey, you know, that just feels really, really good.
That's incredible, because that's, to be honest, I still remember the first book I ever read. And I'm sure every lesbian listening to this will probably know the book I'm going to say, The Well of Loneliness. I mean, in fairness, Yvonne, of course it was an incredible book. But the name itself, The Well of Loneliness, doesn't really inspire much confidence as a I can't remember 16 or 17 when I read this book, and I thought, is this the kind of life that's ahead of me?
Exactly.
You know, full of turmoil and doubt and all the rest. So what is your first book, I suppose, that you read that that maybe resonated with you and your sexuality?
Wow. Well, I'm trying to remember really what I think that I was really drawn to a lot of books and movies where that was like the subtext, but it wasn't kind of really overt, you know, like looking back, I remember like really loving The Color Purple, and, you know, the relationship between the two women is really central to that and the sexuality, but it's sort of, it's in the broader story, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And things like Fried Green Tomatoes.
Oh, amazing.
You know, that film, like, yeah, and I loved it. And it was only years later when I watched it again, and I was like, oh my God, no wonder I loved that film, you know, but it was like, it was sort of, I wasn't fully kind of getting it at the time. But I mean, I hear you, like The Well of Loneliness, it doesn't exactly inspire too much hope going forward, you know.
Thank goodness our lives have turned out really well. Look at us, married.
Absolutely.
You know, happy families and all the rest. So now you mentioned Color Purple, and it just brings me beautifully to, of course, your fourth book, I'm mm-hmm. Right Here, which I think a lot of people have likened to The Color Purple. So I'm going to ask you a question that obviously people ask you a lot. Where did you get the idea from to write a book that's about, I suppose, a child in slavery? It's mm-hmm. very, I suppose, removed from a girl from Dorky, let's be honest.
Right, absolutely. And that was, you know, one of my big hesitations about writing this book. You know, the idea came to me in a very sort of specific way when I spent some time in South Carolina a couple of years ago, and I visited in Charleston. There's a museum there called the Old Slave Mart Museum, and it's really well done, and it's a place where, you know, enslaved adults and children were bought and sold at the time. And there was just, I don't know if you've ever been in a place where there's just a real feeling in it, like it almost felt like the ghosts of the people were still there. You know, there was these stone walls and stone floors, and you could listen to people's voices on tape talking about their experience. And it really affected me and haunted me. And I kept kind of getting this nagging idea that I wanted to write about this. I wanted to write specifically about a child's story. And every time I sort of have that idea or think about it, this other voice would come into my head that would say exactly what you just said. You know, you can't write this story. You're, you know, a white privileged girl from Dorky. You know, what do you know about this stuff? You know, you don't have the right, in a way, to go into this space. And so I feel like I spent quite a while in this sort of limbo. And, you know, a lot of writers I've heard say, and it's my own experience too, like once you have a kind of a character's voice in your head, it's very hard to get them out, and it's very hard to write another character. So I sort of was writing this, like E.L., who's the slave girl in the book, I was sort of writing her story almost just to get it out of my system, like almost just to think, okay, just get this down on paper. It's not going to go anywhere, but we need to just, you know, move on to something else. And over time then, this other character, Cassie, who is the kind of Irish-American young teenager in the book, she started to form in my mind. And I realized that through Cassie, I kind of had a way into to E.L.'s story, because it's not her story either. Like, she almost, you know, mirrors my reaction in the, like, why is this, you know, person speaking to me? Like, why is this anything to do with me? So that kind of gave me a way in. And I think, you know, having a bit of distance now from having written the book, like a lot of the things that E.L. and Cassie experience are similar. I mean, obviously, EL situation is much more extreme, but the idea of not having a voice, not having rights, you know, of being lost, like those types of things, like I think there's certainly universal themes that, you know, for me, I felt like I was able to access writing the book.
That's incredible. And there's, of course, the significance of the cafe that you was doing the bulk of the writing. Could you just tell the listeners, just because it seems like there was a real something in it was meant to be, like the stars aligned, I think, that you had to write this book.
I mean, it really felt like that. Yeah. So I felt like my writing process is I tend to sort of find places where I go and write, and I sort of establish a routine. And for this book, I found myself really drawn to Brooklyn, and specifically this area of Brooklyn called Brooklyn Heights. And I found this, you know, small little cafe. It was a little quiet place. And every day, like I live on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, so it's not around the corner. You know, it's sort of, depending on the subway, a 45-minute or an hour journey. But that's where I would go to write. And I felt really comfortable writing there. And that was my spot. And it was only, I don't know, 6 or 8 months into writing the manuscript, I met a friend of mine one day for lunch who lived around there. And she said to me, she goes, well, you know, she asked me a little bit what the book was about. And I told her, she said, well, you know how instrumental this whole area was in the abolitionist movement. And I said, no, I didn't know at all. And she explained to me how like this church that was literally like 2 blocks away from where I was writing was like one of the central hubs on the Underground Railroad, and how the people there had been really, really instrumental in freeing so many people from slavery. And it just, I mean, it gave us both the chills as we were talking about it that day, like outside this cafe, you know, because it really did feel like I'd somehow been drawn there, that it was all sort of part of some plan that I didn't really know about.
Yeah, it sounds like the story chose you, Yvonne.
In a way, I think it did. And it felt, you know, my experience of writing this book was a little bit different in that, you know, I never fully know where my stories are going. I'm not one of these writers who plots out everything. But with this, I felt like I had really not much of an idea. Like I would sit down and think, okay, I think I'm going to write a scene about this. And then it would just come out in a very fully formed way and be about something different. And so there was a lot of sort of letting go and trusting in the process, which I probably wouldn't have been able to do on my first or even my second book. I think that's something you learn to do as a writer, probably like you learn to do in a lot of things in life. It's just kind of trust a bit more and not feel like you have to exert control all the time and just kind of go with your intuition, you know.
And I have to ask you now, you live in New York and you got married in 2015. And of course, the marriage referendum here happened in May 2015. How do you feel now, 2 years on, and you know, this, the, I suppose your country is now so has embraced our community. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that just that Ireland has come a long way from, say, the Ireland that was when you were growing up?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it seems just like such a cataclysmic shift, really. And, you know, May 2015, I wasn't able to get back to, you know, to vote or be part of that. And I was, you know, I really wanted to, and I was following it so much over here. I was addicted to social media and everything and, you know, the news. And I have to say, Jill, I was so proud to be Irish. I mean, it felt like for people over here, it was so shocking that Ireland, little Ireland, could be the first country in the world to, you know, come to this vote by referendum. And, you know, it really turned people's views of Ireland on its head. And I would have people who say to me, like, you know, when I think of Ireland, I think of, you know, the Catholic country and being so traditional, and, you know, I can't believe that Ireland has really voted in this way. And I felt so proud. And I think, you know, also the majority, you know, vote. It wasn't that it just squeaked in, you know, it was like all these stories of, you know, so many people getting out there and the older generation. And the Sunday afterwards, whatever date that was, this was the 17th, they had, we were on the front cover of the New York Times, you know, on the Sunday where they have the big photo always. The lead photo was of, you know, Dublin and all the gay flags and everything and everybody out in the sun and cheering. And It was just, you know, like I said, I just felt so proud. It felt really amazing to think, wow, you know, we've come a long way.
Fantastic. Yvonne, thank you so much for joining us here on Global Village. Of course, the book is I'm Right Here, which is your latest novel. No doubt there'll be a fifth book in have you started writing already, Yvonne? Have you?
I have started writing already.
I don't believe. That's
yeah,
it.
It sort of takes me over, you know, so you just have to go with it.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And again, congratulations on all your success.
Thank you, Bill.
And a big hello to your wife. And, thank you. Yay.
Major congratulations to you too and Emery. It's great.
Thank you. That's Yvonne Cassidy, Irish author based in New York. And of course, author of I'm Right Here, that's available in all good bookshops. Thank you so much for joining us here on Global Village.
Thank you, Bill.
Well, we reached the end of the program. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did putting it together for you. If you'd like to listen back, you can do so by clicking on the Listen Back feature or by podcasting show on newstalk.com. Now, a couple of things before we go. There's a great documentary airing tonight on Newstalk at 10 p.m. and again at 8 a.m. tomorrow. Imagine Equality takes a look back at the campaign of marriage equality and the impact it had 2 years after the landmark marriage referendum. And there's a load of people who are interviewed on it, including myself and Anne Marie, but there's also Senator David Norris, Senator Ivana Bacic. And so it's a really a great look at where we are 2 years on from the marriage referendum. And that's tonight at 10. And tomorrow, 8 o'clock. And of course, tomorrow, Sunday the 21st, if you are looking for something to do as a family, Africa Day kicks off in Farm Lee in the morning at 10 o'clock. And that's always a great event. And hopefully we'll have the weather because we'll be there for sure. So a big thank you to all our guests and, of course, our producer, Amy Ryan. Coming up next is Orla Barry, The Green Room. So all that's left for me to say till next week is this is Dilruk Kumar Singha, reminding you that we're all part of a global village.